Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Huhib coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Before tomorrow's presidential election in Somalia, tight security is being put in place in the capital, Mogadishu, and confusion reigns in Kenya over the status of the U.S. travel ban.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story today, security has been tightened in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, before Wednesday's presidential election. The run-up to the vote has been tumultuous with repeated delays and allegations of corruption.
And more than 11,000 migrants and refugees have reached Europe by sea since the beginning of the year. 85% of them arrived in Italy and the rest in Greece. The International Organization for Migration says the figure for new arrivals is much lower than last year at the same time when nearly 75,000 arrived. However, that was before the European Union and Turkey reached an agreement to stem the flow of refugees to Greece. The IOM says 255 migrants and refugees have died at sea so far this year, compared to 380 a year ago.
As we said, security has been tightened in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu, before tomorrow's presidential election. The run-up to the vote has been tumultuous with repeated delays and allegations of corruption. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The presidential vote has been postponed four times, but Wednesday, Parliament is expected to finally gather at the Mogadishu International Airport, chosen for security reasons, and elect the country's next leader. The polls have been messy at best, mired in accusations of widespread vote buying. Seats in Parliament allegedly went for thousands of dollars each late last year. VOA's Somali service spoke to former Prime Minister Ali Mohamed Gedi, who expects better during Wednesday vote.
We don't believe that the current parliament of the two houses are not patriotic, are not loyal to their people and their country. We believe that they will overcome, that we believe that the challenges coming from the corruption, mispractices, intimidation and harassment will be defeated by the current two houses of the parliament.
Somalia cannot hold direct nationwide elections due to ongoing insecurity and logistical issues, like the lack of a national census. So parliamentary members were elected by select clan leaders and regional representatives. The presidential candidates debated Monday before parliament. Running for re-election President Hassan Sheikh Mahamud said the next polls will be better.
Waxaanu dhiseynaa siyaasad qaran oo dimuqraadi ah matashana.
The president says he will build a national system that is democratic and represents Somalis. The system will lead to a formation of political parties, not a system made up of clans, region and groups. I will lead the country to one man, one vote system in the year 2020. But former Mogadishu mayor and presidential candidate Mohamud Tarzan Nur said he did not like what he saw during the debate. He says the people of Somalia are hopeful. They want you to listen to the presidential candidates and elect who is qualified to lead. He says the chamber was almost empty. It is sad, and it seems those who are not here have already made up their mind who they are going to vote for. The incumbent is expected to get stiff competition from his predecessor, Sharif Sheikh Ahmed. With so many candidates, the voting is expected to require multiple rounds Wednesday. Somali media has been abuzz for days with the reports of candidates forming alliances, pledging support if eliminated. Some presidential hopefuls have been accused of bribing lawmakers to vote for them. During the lower house elections, some candidates' names were removed from the list and races had to be rerun after corruption and other electoral offences were detected. The chairman of the Independent Anti-Corruption Committee, Professor Abdi Ismail Samata, said Monday the committee is on alert. He says for a credible result, the process must be transparent. He adds Somalia must reduce corruption and lawmakers need to be transparent in their actions. And if lawmakers observe others receiving and taking bribes, they need to report them to the relevant authorities to take action. But analysts say candidates will also be peddling influence. Power-sharing agreements and cabinet posts will be valuable by gaining cheap as votes are cast. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A top advisor to the European Union's top court says EU states must give entry visas to refugees facing possible harm at home. The comments by Advocate General Paolo Mengozi stem from a legal challenge to Belgium's refusal to grant visas to a Syrian family from Aleppo. The family had applied for asylum and planned to stay with acquaintances in Belgium. While Mengozi's comments are not binding, the court usually follows suit. It will take up the case in the next few weeks, which could affect policy across the European Union. Belgium argues it is not obligated to open its borders to everyone fleeing a war zone. The country has been fined daily since November for refusing to allow the Syrian family to settle there.
Confusion reigns in Kenya over the status of the U.S. travel ban. Though a U.S. federal judge put the ban on hold, Somali and Sudanese refugees ready to fly to the U.S. have been sent back to the Kakuma and Dadaab refugee camps. Other refugees farther along in the U.S. immigration process are worried, but they have not lost hope of the ban being lifted. From Kakuma, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
President Donald Trump's travel ban and its legal challenges have caused much anxiety in the Kenyan refugee camps of Kakuma and Dadaab, where those slated for resettlement in the United States are unsure of their futures. The president has argued that temporary measures are necessary to keep the country safe from terrorism. Refugee organizations respond that refugees already are vigorously vetted. Here in Kakuma, 48-year-old Michael Abukasim Kuku, a refugee from Nuba, Sudan, was scheduled to fly to the Refugee Processing Center in Nairobi on January 30th. From there, he was to join his wife in Des Moines, Iowa. But the ban prevented his departure. He says, "I felt really bad and it really affected me. When I was told the ban was there and we were not supposed to go, then that really gave me a hard time." Kuku received a phone call that he is to report to the International Organization for Migration office on February 17th for his flight to Nairobi. He is hopeful that this time he will be successful. Another Sudanese refugee, 24-year-old Abdulaziz Yasir Yahya from Darfur, also was scheduled to fly to Nairobi on January 30th for processing, and then to his new home in Tucson, Arizona. But he remains here. He says, "I want to go to America because my homeland is still in war, and we are just living with no hope. So when I go to America, I might be able to go to school." Ahmed Omar Bihi has lived in refugee camps since 1992, when he fled warfare in Somalia. He lived in Dadaab until 2013, when he was transferred to Kakuma. Bihi was told to expect his U.S. resettlement before March. Now, though, he hopes for the best.
My hope is Mr. Trump is changing his mind and the law will be prevail in order to release us from this harsh life.
Somali refugee Kali Abubakar Muhammad says she was scheduled to leave for her new home in St. Louis, Missouri on February 1st. Instead, however, she was sent back to Dadaab.
But we don't know the reason why people are doing this discrimination.
Yvonne Ndege is the UNHCR Kenya spokesperson.
Well, we're following very closely all the developments going on in the U.S., and the situation is obviously fluid and things are changing constantly. But UNHCR Kenya's understanding is that we are okay for the time being to continue resettling refugees in the United States whilst the legal issues in the United States are resolved.
A request for response from the IOM was not immediately returned. A State Department spokesperson said the processing of refugees is ongoing in Nairobi, including for travel to the United States. The ban suspended for 90 days entry into the United States by citizens from seven Muslim-majority countries where terrorist groups are active, including Somalia and Sudan. All refugees needed to wait 120 days, with the exception of Syrians, who would be barred from entry indefinitely. But for these refugees in Kenya, they hope the legalities can be sorted out and they can soon begin their lives in the United States. Jill Craig, VOA News, Kakuma, Kenya.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib. 15 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Before tomorrow's presidential election in Somalia, tight security is being put in place in the capital, Mogadishu. And more than 11,000 migrants and refugees have reached Europe by sea since the beginning of the year. And confusion reigns in Kenya over the status of the U.S. travel ban. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The UN Refugee Agency warns conditions in camps for Burundian refugees in countries of asylum are deteriorating and more land is urgently needed to accommodate the growing number of new refugee arrivals. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
Tanzania, Rwanda, and the Democratic Republic of Congo are hosting more than 386,000 Burundian refugees. The UN Refugee Agency expects that number to exceed 500,000 this year as refugees continue to flee political instability and abuse in Burundi. Peace talks between the government and opposition are stalled, though Burundi has largely fallen off the media radar. UNHCR spokesman Leo Dobbs tells VOA the crisis gripping the country remains acute.
There are still reports of forced disappearances, targeted assassinations, and extrajudicial killings of civilians and law enforcement agents. There are also sporadic attacks by unidentified armed people. So the situation is still quite grave, and hundreds of people are still leaving. There's still a flow, hundreds of people a week.
As more Burundians flee into neighboring countries, the UNHCR says the pressure for land there is rising. It says the situation is most serious in Tanzania, which is hosting more than 222,000 people. Dobbs says the UNHCR and its partners are working feverishly with the countries of asylum to find more land to ensure shelter.
With the problem of space, if it's not resolved and we don't get more land, then there's a danger that conditions will deteriorate and aid delivery will be affected.
Besides the urgent need for more land, the UNHCR says existing camp facilities must be upgraded, including construction of more homes, schools, health centers, and better drainage systems to lessen the risk of disease. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In Nigeria, police say they killed one teenage suicide bomber in the northeastern city of Maiduguri today, while a second girl, also strapped with explosives, surrendered. Reuters reports the two girls were ordered to halt as they approached a petrol station. However, one continued to advance and was shot dead. The other surrendered and police disarmed the explosive vest she was wearing. Boko Haram militants have increasingly used teenage girls in suicide attacks in northeast Nigeria.
More buses are rolling again between the Ugandan and South Sudan capitals. It's a sign that business is getting better for Ugandan traders selling their wares in Juba. Nevertheless, traders are being warned to be extra vigilant due to ongoing violence in the country. Reporter Catherine Nambi has more on the story from Kampala.
The number of Ugandan traders returning to South Sudan, which is a major export hub for Uganda's agriculture products, construction materials, is steadily increasing 6 months after the war. Following the July war in the country, a number of Ugandan traders fled the restive situation and buses halted their operations, waiting for calm to return. But the operators of the Kampala-Juba-bound buses are happy that travel has resumed, with most of the buses recording a great improvement in travel bookings. According to the bus operators, on average, 4 60-seater buses leave Kampala for Juba, full to capacity daily, while 3 similar buses return to Kampala from Juba, South Sudan. Angutia, Devin, and Peace Moffat, both booking agents of the Kampala-Juba buses, told VOA that unlike in the past 6 months after the conflict, most buses are going and returning from Juba, full to capacity with both passengers and merchandise.
Our bus is moving very well, and business at large, of course, is resuming very well in Juba and all that. Yeah, they're fully booked with full people. Like, you know, the buses really go when they're full. You know, passengers get full in the bus, people are resuming up. Business is getting 100% back to normal. We really like it. We are happy. If the money can come a little bit up, like, you know, the way it used to be some time back, of course, it will be 100% the best.
People are traveling well. They, in fact, sometimes buses get full before the day ends. So you find yourself and you're booking for the next day and the other day and the other day because travel has improved.
Despite the recent ambushes on about 3 of Ugandan buses along the Juba-Nimule Highway in South Sudan, bus touts Godfrey Agara and Christine Maddy maintain that the routes are relatively safe and most buses can freely enter Juba.
We are seeing improvement now, which means that they are been starting working now. Exactly, it makes me happy when I see these buses crossing like this. Yeah, because now people can manage to send their things, their goods like this. Yeah, the buses all goes full with goods.
Yeah, it has increased.
There's good improvement. People are traveling well. There are no rebels on the way.
Ali Waswa, a Ugandan trader phoned preparing to board one of the buses, said that normal business has resumed in South Sudan, although still on a low note, but is hopeful it will fully boom with time.
Business is back to normal, but then we have problems still with the value of the money. But I think with time, it will get better. South Sudan is proud, of course. Right now, it's a little bit lost, but of course, we need it to get a little bit stronger. See, that's what we are looking at. But business is normal, back to normal. We are doing well.
Whereas one US dollar traded at 50 South Sudan pounds before the July 2016 war, it has since shot to 80 South Sudan pounds per dollar. The top Ugandan exports to South Sudan include food, petroleum products, motor vehicles re-exports, cement, steel materials, clothing, beverages, soap and detergents, as well as cooking oil. However, the Uganda government has warned traders returning to South Sudan to exercise caution as the country is not yet fully secure. Jotham Lutabingwa, the resident district commissioner, also in charge of security in Uganda's Lamu district at the Uganda-South Sudan border, says his office is still receiving reports of missing and abducted Ugandans along the Uganda-Juba highway and advised the traders to take calculated risks as they return to Africa's youngest nation.
On our part here, we have areas of South Sudan which are not under government control, which are under rebel militias, like the parts of Ayachi County, that is the Bogen, that is the Pajok, and the other areas. We appeal to our citizens that if there is nothing really so pressing, they should really avoid going there. Because it becomes now hard for us as the government to engage the rebels or whatever. That now becomes the work of the International Red Cross. So far, four Ugandans have lost their lives there or have disappeared in that sector of South Sudan, which was formerly Magu County.
Although the number of Ugandans staying in South Sudan prior to the July 2016 war is not yet known, the Ugandan army last year evacuated an estimated 20,000 Ugandans from the country following renewed fighting between President Salva Kiir and his then Vice President Riek Machar. The war left scores dead and thousands displaced. Uganda Export Promotions Board says that Uganda, which was enjoying $249 million from trade in South Sudan annually, is currently experiencing a slump in exports to the country following the war. For VOA, this is Catherine Nambi in Kampala, Uganda.
Mentally stimulating activities can keep your brain sharp well into old age. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on findings by Mayo Clinic researchers at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona that point to ways to reduce the chance of developing mild dementia.
Exercising, putting together puzzles, socializing. These are some of the things researchers are looking at as ways to keep older adults from developing dementia. Some studies focus on exercise. Exercise improves blood flow in the brain and keeps it functioning both physically and mentally. Other studies focus on mental activity. Researchers at the Mayo Clinic looked at brain-stimulating activities to see if it could help older adults lower the risk of developing even mild cognitive impairment. Mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, doesn't interfere with everyday life, but those who have it are at greater risk for developing Alzheimer's.
This study is very important because dementia, MCI, these conditions are really common as we get older. We need to find out non-pharmacological approaches to decrease the risk of MCI or dementia.
Gaeta of the Mayo Clinic in Scottsdale, Arizona, co-authored a study that included 2,000 healthy adults, 70 and older, to see if playing games, crafting, using a computer, and staying socially active could reduce the risk of mild cognitive impairment. The researchers found that these activities, even late in life, helped stave off dementia, even in those who were genetically at risk. Only 15% of the participants developed mild cognitive impairment over an average of 4 years. The mental activity doesn't have to be a chore, Gaeta said. Just exercising your brain 2 to 3 times a week could reduce cognitive decline. The study was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Brotte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.